You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess Vegas can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. I wanted my cake and eat it too. I wanted it both ways. Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of loosely abused ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get, it was bittersweet. It was like winning a used me. I'm blinded cause I think I'm getting so huge. I need a shrink, I'm beginning to lose sleep.
Matt Lauer's apologizing. What's he sorry for? I'm most sorry that I got caught. Because other than that, oh my God, John Conyers has been hospitalized in Detroit. Ugh, good God. You know it's bad. You know it's bad when the sexual assaulters are going in the hospital. Does that make me sound like a callous? I was going to use a foul word right there. Jeez, I hope it doesn't make me sound too callous. I got a couple emails here. I'll get to Matt Lauer in a second. First of all, I think it's in poor taste that NBC, when they do this stuff, that they have his former colleagues read his apology. What are they fronting for him? Okay, they had to make their announcement yesterday. It's now a news story. You know, so, like, why are they reading Matt Lauer's statement? That should come out of the newsroom. They choose to comment on it, that's fine, but they're not his girls. Okay, NBC, get your head out of your ass, okay? The guys, you know, and Matt, this might not be about you apologizing. This might be about you going to trial for rape, okay, and going to jail. How about that?
What do you mean?
Yeah, you get accused of sexual assault, and they can prove it? Guess what happens, bro? It ain't about your apology. It just, you know, the arrogance, right? The arrogance is what, to me, is really interesting about all this. I get an email. Mac, what do you think Mike Pence's rule about never be alone with a woman? I like that rule. Now, I know people say, oh, you know, we're supposed to be able to, and I'm like, yeah, that's right. Okay, but I have this to say about that. I've, you know, seen people have their careers get ruined by this stuff. The mere accusation puts you in a different pool, okay? The investigation puts you in a different pool. So, I myself did not particularly care to work with women for that exact reason. It changes the whole dynamic of the workplace. Now, it's unavoidable, right? I know that people are going to say, what a jackass. Yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't care for it. My introduction was it, interestingly, to it in the Marine Corps was, well, I went to work for Merrill Lynch out of college. So there's this game that gets played, right? Merrill Lynch, big time company, right? Up in Los Angeles, I went to work for them. And, you know, the most attractive women there tended to be in administrative positions. And they got all kinds of attention. That's right. And they certainly dressed the part, too. They were good-looking women, and they knew it. And they leveraged it. So there's this game that gets played. And I guess it's okay as long as everybody stays in their lane, right? all of a sudden somebody gets out of their lane and brr, what happened? So, to me, I was always pretty respectful of that. Like, not really sure. So, fast forward to the Marine Corps. I stayed at Merrill Lynch about a year and a half. I watched that stuff, and I'm a bookkeeper originally, and then and then I become a broker. Blah 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 blah. So very respectful of you know. And again, I'm raised by my mom with three sisters in the house. I mean, I had to overcome that as a human being. You know. The estrogen assault on my ears. But, you know, in retrospect, I mean, it was a good part of my upbringing. Because I can hear Kathleen in my head. So, anyway, I fast forward to my time on sea duty. So, I joined the Marine Corps. I go through officer candidate school and the basic school with women. And I didn't particularly care for it. Why? Because we always seem to have to slow down. We always had to make allowances for them. And they weren't us. They weren't equal. All right? And I could never say that, obviously. But, you know, we would talk about being in all-male companies and how much different it could be and how much how you wouldn't have to be careful about what you did. You could just, you know, be a dude. Okay, so there was that. So then I go, so, you know, I will say that, you know, there was this kind of this undercurrent of resentment that we had to be correct. We just couldn't be guys and you know, in the military, that as soon as a woman walked in, things became different. And they do, whether anybody cares to admit that or not, they do. All right, so fast forward now. I go 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, all guys. I leave there. I go to 1st Light Armored Vehicle Battalion, Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion, I think it's called now. And they all guys. And then I go to sea duty, all guys. Now, while we're at sea duty, when we go qualify on the range, we go up to Edson Range, I think. At Camp Pendleton. Well, we're shooting with units with, first, at the time, it was FSSG, now MLG, the logistics group, right? And they're all they're mixed gender units, right? So, one thing I'll never forget is I walked into some briefing at Edson Range, and I just walked in the door with a couple of my Marines. Now, you know, when somebody walks in and they look at you and they outrank you and they say, good morning to you, right? If you're seated, normally you stand up and you say, good morning, sir. Or, you know, if you're enlisted, you say, good morning, Sergeant Major, good morning, First Sergeant, whatever. So I walk in this building and this Marine's sitting there with two female Marines. And I said, hey, good morning to him, right? Because the two of them were doing, I don't know what they were doing, but they were doing something. And he just looked at me and he said, good morning, sir. And I remember, like, what was that? And I didn't jack him up or anything. So we sat through this briefing and I just watched the whole dynamic. And what I saw, now this is Mac as a first lieutenant. What I saw was this element of cool. Was there, the discipline wasn't there so much because, you know, I don't want to be, you know, real disciplined because these women, my impression was because these women are here. And I don't want to come off being anybody's bitch in front of these women. And so I watched it and there was this element of flirting. There was this element of what I would say sexuality. That was involved with it that I didn't like at all, honestly. And so my preference is, so a roundabout answer to Mike Pence, never be alone, I didn't think that was bad advice. And I practiced it, especially in the Marine Corps. I didn't spend a whole lot of time with women. I went to the basic school. They were there. You know, a lot of young female lieutenants are there. You're a captain. You know, you go to mess night, people start drinking. It's like, yeah, stay away from them, right? Because people get their careers ended on mess nights. And people would say, oh, that's, you know, that's a little draconian, don't you think? No, I don't think. And ask people that have got caught up in that stuff. They don't think it's draconian either. Yep, that's a little bit of poor judgment. Anyway, that's an answer to an email I got. Mike Pence. I know my monitor, is booting up. Let me go back to Matt Lauer, and then I'll tell you what we're going to do today. Then we'll get the show going, blah, 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 blah. Look, I'm not interested in Matt Lauer's apology. I want to find out. I'd be curious if I was involved in that. Two things. A, what is the scope of what he did? And how many of these people, these victims, came to somebody and got pushed away? And I want to know who the enablers were, because the next phase of this is the enablers are going to. And so I think that's an important part of this. Trust me, there's people that went to NBC, and NBC can deny it and say this is the first time we've ever heard about it. What do you mean? Well, we weren't here when some of that stuff happened. Well, wait a minute. So NBC is an institution. So I don't want to hear that garbage. So anyway, I just, my own opinion is that I have a hard line for this kind of stuff, because to me it's predatory. And I do believe there should be a little bit more. The whole sex thing changes everything, and maybe someday we can live in a society where that is not the case. But it is the case, and you can see how wrong it goes. So, I don't want to hear anything from Matt Lauer. I don't want to hear his former co-host reading apologies anymore, right? And the next time he writes a letter for clarification, I don't want them to read that, right? That's an investigation. It should be an internal investigation at NBC. It's handled out of the newsroom, right? The girls sitting out front, they can do commentary. They're not Matt Lauer's girls carrying his messages, though. Okay? That looks stupid. It looks stupid, and I'm surprised that NBC would allow that. So with all that said, we're going to talk to Tom Drowdy here in about 17 minutes. Tom Drowdy served with Colonel Wesley Fox, who passed away last week. I don't know if you enjoyed those interviews yesterday, but I love that stuff. You know, getting to find stuff in long format with guys like him is not easy. I'm like the only person that does stuff like that, long format interviews. So to hear him talk about coming in the Marine Corps, how about when he says, my first 4 years on active duty, I didn't own civilian clothes. That's how much I like being a Marine. When I went home to farm, I'd wear my utilities, farming. When I went to town, I'd wear one of my uniforms. That's awesome. I love that. Then in another part of one of those interviews, he talked about being a drill instructor. And then in Vietnam, he didn't think the Marines would be as tough as the Marines were in Korea, because he was a drill instructor in 1955, which is the year before the Ribbon Creek event in 1956. And it sounds like the way he spoke about it, I'm not sure if he was still on the island or if he knew that gunnery sergeant, God, I can't remember his name, that took those Marines into Ribbon Creek. But he said, you know, all of a sudden there was officers all over Paris Island. They were supervising what you did. I didn't think that Marines would be as tough. And then he said, but I was wrong. So it was interesting. And then the other thing I loved that he said was why he loved to wear his Medal of Honor. He said, you know, I didn't do what Audie Murphy did. You know, I didn't jump up on a tank and hold off a battalion or anything like that. I just led my company and we fought. So the award I wear for my company. I thought, you know, that's a pretty interesting statement about the guy. And it comes through over and over and over again that whenever you hear him talk, he always talked about his unit, talked about his Marines, talked about his job. And then the other part about the Medal of Honor that he was the recipient of was he said, look, I was trying to get out of there. I was trying to get out of there. But once I did an assessment of how many people I would need to take the wounded, you know, you didn't have to be a genius to figure out that I didn't have enough people to protect us as we, you know, as we left. And so we would have got annihilated trying to leave. So I had to fight. And we were either going to win or we were all going to stay in the Oshawa Valley. Yeah, how about that? Yikes. But I love that stuff. And, you know, Wes Fox, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, rose to the rank of, was selected for first sergeant, never wore it. As the gunny, he was commissioned, he said, I was a gunny one day and a second lieutenant on the same day, and, got voluntold he would do that, and he was going to Vietnam to lead. So, so those interviews are awesome. If you didn't hear them, check out yesterday's broadcast. They're good stuff. Good stuff. And again, they're long interviews with a Medal of Honor recipient, a leader, guy who fought in Korea and Vietnam, just a great guy, and a legend in the Marine Corps. I can't remember where I was, where he was in Quantico. I was an instructor at the basic school, and he was a commanding officer out at OCS. And, you know, when Colonel Fox would walk in the room, man, like I said, things got quiet. And not out of, there was no fear or anything like that. It was just, he was a legend. Wesley Fox. That's right. All right. Tom Drowdy's going to join us. He was Drowdy's XO someplace. So we're going to talk to Tom Drowdy about Wes Fox. I'm trying to get Barney Barnum on to talk about him. So we'll see if Colonel Barnum will come on. I'm sure they crossed paths in the Medal of Honor Society. They were contemporaries in Vietnam and throughout their time in the Marine Corps. But I have no idea if they actually know each other. So I'd love to do that. And then I've got a line on a couple other guys that have served with or under Colonel Fox. So we'll try to do that today. So we'll talk to Tom Drowdy, and then Chris Woodbridge from the Gazette's going to join us today, and then the Gunner will join us. So good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official, and yeah, there you go. So good morning. Oh, one more thing, and Matt Lauer, shut up, would you? Just shut up. Nobody's interested in your comment about anything. Okay? And I'm sure you did that on the advice of your lawyer, blah, 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 be contrite. You know, and when in his statement when he says the last 2 days, oh, really, it just occurred to you the last 2 days? Then guess what? You're an idiot. You're a complete, selfish, predatory idiot. And if you did the things that there was a piece of video that I saw yesterday, late in the afternoon on Fox. They had the guy from TMZ on. TMZ, believe it or not, breaks a lot of news. I know that it makes us all uncomfortable, but they break the news that other people don't want to, right? And stories like Monica, they didn't break it. Stories like Monica Lewinsky don't come from the mainstream media. Why? Because they protect people. So anyway, TMZ. Yeah. So anyway, they showed this this video clip of Matt Lauer, and he's live on the set. They're taking a commercial break. He's talking on the phone to somebody that says, yeah, just be outside. I'll meet you there. Okay, bye. And with that, there's a woman sitting to his right. You don't see her face, okay, because the shot's on him. So, you know, he fixes his hair, and then he looks at her, and he says, nice sweater. And she must smile. And then he says, keep bending over like that. It's a nice view. And then he just goes back to what he's doing. What? Like, are you kidding me? Now, just know this, that his microphone's open to the control room and all that. So if you have somebody who's unafraid to say stuff like that, live on the set of the Today Show, for God's sakes. And he's smart enough to know one of the great fears of doing media stuff is having an open mic and getting caught saying things that you shouldn't say. Okay? That's one of the great fears of anybody that, like, yeah, can you imagine? So anyway, so when you do this and that happens to you after the first time, if you're smart, you have control over your mic. You get a mic that has an on-off switch, and when you go to break, you shut that off. Okay, and then you can talk in the control room or you can talk on the set, but that stuff doesn't go out to anybody. And so somebody could turn on your microphone, but they're not going to hear anything until you turn it on. So anyway, just in case you ever become a broadcaster, some advice for you, something to pay attention to. The arrogance of that guy to think that he could say that on that set with his mic open, pretty astounding. So, Matt, from me to you, shut up, okay? Nobody's interested, and nobody's stupid enough to think a predator like you, okay, who hopefully will go to jail for what he did, is interested in anything other than what he wants. And now trying to salvage his $20 million a year job. Yeah. And his extravagant lifestyle, they're probably going to take a few hits to it. So I feel bad for your family. I especially feel for your kids who I'm sure go to school and have to hear people talk shit about you. But it is what it is, bro.
We have my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Quick email before we get to the weather. People that think that nobody complained about Matt Lauer are fools. You have a saying about something relative to the Iraqis. I can't remember what it was, but it talks about allowing you to see what they want you to see. The phrase is, nothing is what you see. Everything you see because they want you to see it. And you stop believing in coincidences. So, yeah, you become incredibly skeptical about everything you see. That's what the Iraqis taught me. Currently, yeah. So, you know, so to think that people at NBC didn't know about it, that's ridiculous. And again, that should be the next round of purges. When you see all these people, Harvey Weinstein, he doesn't exist without people that are supporting that. Right? Looking the other way, fending off the phone calls. Right? And you've seen the stories about John Conyers, one staffer saying that, yeah, it was my responsibility to get these women to different events. You know, a whole support network. They should be the next ones that are fired. They enabled. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have done that. Should have said no. But, and I know it's rough, but you got to stand up and do the right thing. Currently, cloudy in 49 at Quantico. Sunny in 61 at Camp Lejeune in Granbury, Texas. Mostly sunny 48. Montana, clouds in 35. 29 Palms, sunny and 52 at Camp Pendleton. Clouds and 45 at Pendleton. Come on, what's going on? That ain't right. It needs to get above 50. We don't need the 40s in California. The in Okinawa, cloudy, dark, and 68. Ooh, haven't seen it below 70 yet. There you have it. In Raqqa, it's clear and 59. And dark. In Marshall, clear, dark, and 55. At the home of All Marine Radio, mostly cloudy, 52 on our way to 70 degrees here. Did any of those women tell him to stop when it was going on? That comes from Montana Man. I would imagine, but I guess we'll find out. I guess we'll find out. Here's the dilemma is, just like it would be when your commanding officer decides that he wants to become romantic with you. Right? Who's going to believe me? And what happens to me if I say no? That's why the whole fraternization thing, right? He's Matt Lauer. He's the franchise. And then from Montana, if not, they're enabling as well. Oh, so we're victim shaming from Montana now. I don't know, man. I think when you're in that situation, I don't think you can judge that too harshly. Right? He's the franchise. He makes $20 million a year. You're trying to get your start in that industry. And just like the woman who had the press conference with Al Franken, right? She said, when I was mulling doing this, I talked to friends, and they said, you know, you can have your 15 minutes of fame by accusing Al Franken, but guess what? You'll never work in this business again. So what do? You do what 99% of people do. You shut up. And you try not to get in that situation again, but you're not going to go after Matt Lauer. You're not going to go after Al Franken. You're not going to go after Harvey Weinstein. They're all powerful, powerful, powerful people. You worked your ass off to get to a point where you're in the same company, and now you're going to blow it all up? No. And again, you can see that's the way it happens. Charlie Rose, right? Bill O'Reilly, Mark Halperin, all these people. It's the same thing. It's the game that powerful people play. And I'll take what I want. You want to try to roll against me? Well, fine. We'll see how that works out for you. I'll get my lawyers after you. We'll discredit you. We'll call you a liar. I'll deny that it ever happened. It's your word ultimately against mine. You have no proof. Oh, but you do? You have pictures of me? You have my voice? You save my text messages? Damn it. I hate when somebody has evidence about me. Anyway, all right, I'm late to call Tom Droughty. We'll take a quick break. Tom Droughty will join us. We'll talk about his relationship with Wesley Fox, get his thoughts on the passing of Wesley Fox, a giant in the Marine Corps. More of All-Marine Radio on a Thursday. Coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All-Warrior Radio Network. Quit victim shaming. Boom!
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Thursday morning. Mike McNamara with you, and privileged to be joined by retired Marine Corps Brigadier General Tom Drowdy. Tom, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. I'm just great. Belated happy Thanksgiving to you and all the listeners. I hope that you enjoyed this opportunity to be thankful to live in this great country and to enjoy the freedoms that we still have.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. You were just honored here recently, I saw. Yes?
Yeah, it was really a surprise. My hometown of Kankakee, Illinois, the Kankakee Foundation, Kankakee Valley River Foundation, a group of this benevolent organization that provides support to a number of educational endeavors and charities and so forth. But they've been in existence for 35 years, and they decided to, for the first time, honor someone and contacted me, and I said, yeah, I'm really, touched by this. I would accept that honor, gratefully, but with a great deal of surprise. I mean, as I told them, I'm the guy who left Kankakee, in 1958 to head off to the Naval Academy and into the Marine Corps with only limited returns. But the real heroes, so to speak, are those who stayed there and made the area, a better place. But the real highlight, Mac, besides receiving the award, was a chance to talk to my high school of 500 students, which this is now Bishop McNamara Catholic High School.
Yes!
Great name there. I was thinking of you.
thank you. Did you tell them?
But it includes now 7th and 8th grade as well. So right. It's 7th grade through senior in high school. And I'll tell you that the kids are just fantastic. I mean, right out of central casting, in uniform, fresh-faced, focused, sincere, great questions. As I say, our youth is 20% of our population, but 100% of our future. But I'll tell you, these kids look like a great future in store for all of us. So it was a real treat to spend about an hour and a half with them.
Wow.
The principal, I asked the principal, what do they need to hear? And he said, well, there's a tendency to give up too easily. And so I said, okay, I'm going to talk about failures, my failures, and what I learned from them. So kind of a different talk to bring an old guy back and from the class of 1958 to talk about his failures, but hopefully with some lessons for the youngsters. So anyway, it was a real treat to be there with them and a real shot in the arm for me. I hope also for them.
You know, Tom, it's interesting. One of the things when I go speak to young people, I talk about, I tell them I'm going to give them the keys of life today, which automatically, like, at least makes their head raise. Like, what did he just say? Yeah, I'm going to guarantee you that if you do the things I tell you to, you're going to live a great life. And one of them is toughness, along the same lines with dealing with failure. If you don't, the life that's waiting for you outside this high school, if you don't make your car payments, somebody's going to come and take your car. If you don't, yeah. If you don't make your rent payment, they're going to evict you. Okay, so, and when life rolls on you, it doesn't just kick you in the stomach once. It kicks you in the stomach six or seven times. But if you get up the eighth time, guess what? You win. Are you tough enough? Are you tough enough to go out and get two jobs, to pay your bills, to get through a tough time? Or will you curl up and get in the fetal position and go back and live with your parents, taking your wife and kids with you? So,
yeah.
So are you tough? And we don't talk about it a whole lot, about being tough. And it's actually, in my opinion, it's de-emphasized as a quality. We all want to be in touch with, and you hear this so much, it makes me want to vomit. How did that make you feel? Oh, really? When they repossessed my car, it made me feel bad because I made my feet ache actually because I had to walk everywhere. You know,
yeah.
It sucked. It made my self-esteem go down because I had to take the bus with everybody else taking the bus, and that didn't feel good. And so, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know. Kids are blank canvases, and they have not changed since we started inventing them many, many, many thousands of years ago. Adults have changed, and we've tried to make the lives of our children too easy, and I think we're uncomfortable being authority figures, unlike our parents were. You know, our parents had no issues being authority figures. We want to make it easy. We don't want to hold them back. You know, we go talk to the teacher when our kid's going to fail. You know, did your parents ever do anything of that?
Well, my parents were there every time the teacher raised an issue because of the interest that they had that I was, you know, going to get through school and in good shape and then do what was necessary. But if I was in trouble, it was a double punishment of punishment at school and then punishment at home. I mean, that was just understood.
So,
but I think the other mistake that parents make is trying to be a buddy to their children rather than being a parent, and you know, that never works when you are so concerned about hurting the feelings of your child rather than doing what has to be best to develop, you know, our children into the adults that we hope that they become.
Single greatest thing you have to teach your kid, you got to teach them how to swim. You got to teach them about guns, whether they're in your house, or in somebody else's house. And you got to teach them how to overcome adversity, and you do that by how you show them to come back, because you're a McNamara man or you're a McNamara woman, right? When you fail.
Yep.
If you can do that, and you can show them how to come back, but if you don't let them fail, they can never come back. And the other thing is about self-esteem and kids and all that. You know, you can't give a kid enough participation trophies to give them self-esteem. Because I guarantee you, Tom, you've never heard this. Hey, Grandpa, stay here. I want to show you my participation trophy that I got. Nobody's ever heard those words. But when somebody wins an award that they earned, like all of us, you'll probably see that. Whether it's displayed in the house or whether they go get it and say, hey, I have something to show you. Because they earned it and they're proud of it. And it's only through that achievement and hard work, you know, that you have success. Okay.
Yeah, a great quote that I shared with them was Churchill said that success is going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. And I said, let me take that a step further. One of Churchill's greatest failures was Gallipoli.
Right.
And so, but he didn't lose enthusiasm. And then there was this group called the United States Marine Corps that did not lose enthusiasm and said, a lot to be learned from this failure. You know, how do we make it work? And they're then, you know, laid the groundwork for the success in World War II. But, you know, failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. I thought that was a great, great quote.
Tell me about meeting Colonel Wesley Fox for the first time. Where did you guys cross paths?
Wes was my executive officer. When I assumed command of Company A Marine Security Guard Battalion, the company was headquartered in Frankfurt, in those days, West Germany, when West Germany was divided from East Germany, and that was our headquarters. I had taken over from Lieutenant Colonel Jim Cooper, and Wes was the XO. He was finishing his second tour. His first year, I believe, had been in Paris, and then they consolidated the company there in Frankfurt. So he and his wonderful wife, Dottie Lou, and their three daughters were so much a part of our family during our 1 year together. And Wes was just a solid, tremendous executive officer. We covered all of Europe, Mac, which is, I think, is now divided into three regions. But we, the company, ranged from Moscow on the east to Reykjavik, Iceland on the west, and down to Nicosia, Cyprus. We finally ended up. So every embassy, consulate, any place that had Marine security guards received two inspections a year, plus a visit whenever the chief of mission, be it the ambassador or chargé or whatever, requested you know, one of us to come in to handle a problem or to look over a situation. So we spent lots and lots of time on the road, but during the times we were together, it was always a joy to be with Wes. Just a tremendous example. If you have time for one story,
sure.
So when in 1960.
So this is what year? This is
this was 1963.
Okay,
so
this,
I arrived at Frankfurt to assume command of Company A.
So he's either Staff Sergeant or Gunnery Sergeant Fox, yes?
No. He was Captain Fox. He had been commissioned. This was after Vietnam. Of course, he was captain.
I thought you said it was 63.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It was 73.
Okay. All right. I'm with you.
So 73, I showed up, and he's the captain and the XO of the company, and so that was our meeting. But in 1974, our second son was born. Now, at this time, as the birth is approaching, Sandy said, you know, I think the baby's going to be coming here real soon, and, you know, you're headed off for this conference in Washington. And I said, honey, just hang in here. You know, this is a conference of all of the company commanders back in D.C., so it's one that I've got to attend. And so, you know, just hang in. Well, sure enough, when I'm back in Washington, our son Ryan is born. Wes was in Frankfurt at the time, and being the father of three wonderful daughters, you know, the thought of a new boy in the area was just fantastic. So he dresses up, I mean, a suit and tie and you know, just a sharp, goes over to the hospital with a bunch of flowers, I think it was lilies or something presenting. So, and the nurses, of course, are just, you know, falling all over themselves with this, you know, over 6 foot, you know, square jawed, you know, Marine with you know, the flowers and everything. And then, oh, this is great. So, you know, he sees the Ryan, gets a chance to hold him and so forth. About a day or so later, I arrive from a midnight red-eye flight from D.C., you know, looking like I had just taken out the garbage in a sweater, not shaving. I'm rushing right over to the hospital, and the nurses say, and who are you again? I said, well, I'm the father of the, you know, the little boy there. And it was kind of like looking at one another like, gee, I thought the father was a good-looking guy that was here a couple of days ago, and Sandy later said she sought to have heard the nurses saying, you know, if you have a choice, Mrs. Rowdy, take the first one. But anyway, Wes and Dottie and their family welcomed Ryan into the Marine community, and we've been just really admirers of the Foxes ever since. tremendous family and a tremendous man and a great loss to our country and to our Corps.
It was interesting. I played a couple of interviews that he did. One he did for the Veterans Historical Project, which is about an hour long, and then one he did on Westwood One for one of the books he wrote. And he talks about, you know, the action with Alpha 19 that led to the Medal of Honor. But he also there's so much great stuff that he talks about. One is the Marine Corps that he joined in 1951, I think. In 1950, going to Korea, that it was not ready for combat, that it had gone from over 600,000 to 68,000 Marines, and the commandant had promised a division, but the Marine Corps didn't have a division, and so he said, "I remember when we got to Japan, they said everybody under the age of 18 and who never went to boot camp, assemble on this part of the ship," and they took him off. He said that's what we sailed to Korea with. I think he was part of the one MEB that headed in that direction. And you know, he talked about you know, he said we would attack hills in a column of files. He said, you know, we didn't have, you know, people want to think that we had all these combat seasoned veterans there, and he said, at least when, you know, where I was in 3-5, he said we didn't. And he said, but I learned. He talked about the leadership of his squad leader, a corporal. And then he talked, and you know, he said some interesting things, Tom, about he was a drill instructor before the Ribbon Creek event.
Yeah.
And he talked about you know, all of a sudden all these officers just invaded Paris Island, and he said we couldn't do the things that we normally did with Marines to make them, you know, rough and tough. And he said, I didn't think that Marines in Vietnam would be as tough. And when after he did his advisor tour and he extended to go to 9th Marines and hopefully get command, but he wanted to fight with Marines. In the interview I watched, he said, you know, being an advisor, he said, we're supposed to be on search and destroy operations. It was more like search and avoid. And I was tired of it, and I wanted to get with Marines because I knew that they would avoid nothing, that when they found them, they would kill them. And he said, so that's why I went. And then the story, you know, of his Medal of Honor citation is that they bump into a battalion, and he's trying to break contact, and he quickly deduces that he can't break contact, and
yeah.
So they've got to fight, and then for those actions, he's the recipient of the Medal of Honor. And then he talks about how much he loved wearing the medal. Because he said, look, I didn't do what Audie Murphy did. You know, he said, I fought my company. And it was this award is for my Marines. He said, there's other people who should have won the medal that day. But you have to have two eyewitness accounts, and a lot of the witnesses were killed. You know, some of the guys who deserved this award were killed. And he just comes across as, one, a good, decent man from the state of Virginia. And but he loved being a Marine. And he loved the Marine Corps.
Yeah, no doubt about those. And also an extremely honest and self-effacing individual. I can recall some of the stories when you talk about growing up and again, failures on his part that were just not what you would sometimes expect of someone who is as successful as he was, obviously, in the Marine Corps. But really a humane or human side that he was not hesitant to share. And, you know, for a man especially, that's a very special quality, because guys oftentimes can be boastful, or if not boastful, at least, you know, reticent about those things that didn't work out well. But Wes was extremely honest and, as I say, self-effacing, and is one of those qualities that always struck me about him. You always felt comfortable in his presence because you're in the presence of a real gentleman as well as a genuine hero.
I'm curious. Do you think we've ever had another colonel in the Marine Corps that didn't graduate from the 8th grade?
Oh, me. my guess is
probably not.
Probably not, but if so, then it would be just really a handful.
A short list.
Different circumstances that would allow someone to succeed despite that background.
The other thing is, he looked like a Marine. When you see him, you know, in Vietnam era as a captain, there's a great picture of him with it wearing the medal. You look at that picture and you point at it and you say, that's what a Marine. Now, we don't all look like that, but when you see that picture, you say that dude's a Marine.
Yeah, I used the term before, central casting, but right. You know, Hollywood could not have come up with a better image of a Marine than Wes Fox. And the beauty was he was the real thing, and that made it all the better.
My guest, retired Brigadier General Tom Drowdy. Tom, talk about the way he led, because when you hear him talk about leadership, he uses the term the right kind of leadership, right? Doing the right thing at the right time and caring about Marines. And he would give these examples of Korea, his squad leaders, and he talked about, you know, he goes, sea rats, he said, you couldn't heat them up because you couldn't, you know, you couldn't do that at night. It'd be cold. You'd be carving out, you know, your sea rats with your K-bar. And eating it, and nobody wanted to eat corned beef and hash, or I think that's what the meal was. And he said, and I can't remember the corporal's name, but his squad leader would tell the fire team leaders, "Hey, give these out, and then give me what's left." He said, and I sure hope he liked corned beef and hash. He said because he ate it all the time, because nobody else would eat it. He said, I watched that. And I learned from that. He said, you know, and at one point he said he was going to get us a propane stove. I used to call them a little squad automatic stove that used to come in that cylinder. And he said, you know, and when we got back to a base camp, he said, I'm talking about a Marine Corps in which, he said, look, we had one canteen. All right. Cause there was not two Marine Corps. We didn't have the equipment anymore. We had thrown it all away. He said we would take canteens and cartridge accoutrements off of guys that were wounded so we could have more. He said that was the Marine Corps. And he said, look, he would carry around the stove, and he seldom got to use it because we used it all the time. And he said it was this kind of unselfishness in combat, you know, and he tells a story about them thinking – they'd been in the line for, I don't know, the better part of 6 weeks. He said, and we were just, you know, you can't sleep at night. You know, in those stalemate battles, you know, it was people trying to infiltrate at night. And he said, you're just exhausted. So we thought we were going to get pulled back. We get told we're not getting pulled back. We're going to get moved to the flank where we had to be more vigilant. And he said, we're so mad, we're humping someplace, and we're not even joking. And he said, and anybody who's been around Marines knows that when they're not joking and bitching, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And he started singing. I wish I could remember the song that he was singing. You know, but it's like he started singing, I don't have a care in the world. And he said, and it just made me madder. And it made me madder and made me madder. And then lo and behold, all of a sudden somebody started bitching. And then two people started bitching. And he said he just had this. So give me some sense of Wes Fox as a leader.
Well, the leading by example is probably the one that sticks out in my mind. As I indicated, we went to spend a lot of time on the road inspecting the detachments, and part of the inspection was the PFT. My predecessor would observe the PFT, you know, to do the timing and so forth, and so that. I guess that's the way we do it. And then I learned that Wes ran the PFT with every detachment. And so he set the example for me that if you're going to go out and inspect the detachment, then you should, in fact, run the PFT also. So, and I smoked at the time, which made it even more of a challenge. But by golly, but the advantage of it from a practical standpoint was by my running the PFT, I damn well knew whether they were running 3 miles or not. Because if I was getting a time around 18 minutes or under, then I knew we were running less than 3 miles. So it was a good quality check on my standpoint. But he set that example, and one that that translated to me that he was an officer, and as a guy going out and doing the inspecting, you run the PFT. Now, the IGs of the Marine Corps didn't do that, but and I don't know if any of the other company commanders or what are they called, regional Marine officers, right. The other titles that we had, if they did it as well, I don't think so. But in Company A, both the CEO and the XO ran the PFT, and that was due to the example of Wes Fox. He just understood that being a Marine is special, and being a leader of Marines meant you had to set the example, and everything that you did, he was immaculate in appearance, you know, not a thing that would be out of line. He just was a you know, picture perfect Marine, but even better than that was the quality of the individual that he was. And again, a devoted husband and father. You know, he was the Marine that I wanted to be, and a tremendous example for me and for everyone in the company.
I had one of my lieutenants post something on Facebook. He went through OCS when Colonel Fox was a CO there, and he said he could run anybody in the ground. He would run our PFTs with us, and he would be either at or near the front. The only people that would beat him would be guys who were in college that were running track.
Oh, yeah. To come into shape the entire time and stay that way, you bet.
Tell me something about Colonel Fox that would surprise most people.
I guess how gentle and caring he was, and demonstrated not only with his family but also with other people. I never heard him raise his voice, and I never heard him. I don't think I ever heard him swear. You know, he just was a consummate gentleman, and a guy who came from you know, very humble origins, but he was a gentleman, I think, from birth. He just understood that there are certain things that gentlemen do and certain things that they don't, and whether it's the treatment of women, an appropriate topic these days, or your speech, or your dealings with especially juniors, peers, or seniors. You know, if there's ever anybody who could play the role of, I'm really special, and so I can get away with, you know, cutting corners, whatever. That was not in Wes's kit bag. I mean, he was the genuine article in every respect. Again, just that example that in every way, the way he looked, the way he acted, the way he spoke, his demeanor, his ease, his grace with people was just superb. And again, a real tribute to his development. And I know very much a part of that was his wonderful wife, Dottie Lou, who was, you know, equally, you know, focused on people and taking care of. Dottie Lou couldn't have been kinder to Sandy when we were there and going through the birth of our son, Ryan. You know, just a wonderful family and couple. And we hated to see them go. It was just a wonderful year that we had with them.
Again, my guest, Tom Drowdy, we're talking about the passing of Colonel Wesley Fox, Medal of Honor recipient during Vietnam with Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, Operation Dewey Canyon in the Oshawa Valley. He has a certain way of saying Oshawa Valley, too, that's pretty cool. I'm curious, have you ever heard of a guy who went from private to, he was wearing the rank of gunny, but he had been selected for first sergeant. Have you ever heard of a guy who's had that path in the Marine Corps that rose to that kind of rank and then went the officer side and got to the rank of colonel?
No, I have not. And that's, you know, again, a tremendous tribute to him.
Right.
And, you know, the wisdom of the Marine Corps during Vietnam to make that decision to commission really top-notch staff NCOs. Now, there was a risk because in doing so, a top-notch staff NCO now became an officer, right. So we were robbing the ranks of staff NCOs, but by the same token, we're enhancing and enriching the ranks of the officers with this tremendous experience that they provided. And I think Wes was just probably the best example of how that worked, because in doing so, he not only served as an officer, but then continued on as an officer, and not everyone who was temporarily promoted or married to a temporary officer, you know, maintained the officer status. He did, obviously, and continued on. And I guess the main thing is that he continued on and performed in a way that he would have succeeded whether he had the Medal of Honor or was awarded the Medal of Honor or not. And I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but he was just a superb Marine who also was awarded the right. Medal of Honor, right. if that makes sense. He was a success. No.
I think that medal did not make him what he was.
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it, I guess. Yeah, he was truly a top-notch individual who was also a true hero and a recipient of the Medal of Honor.
No, it was cool listening to him speak about wearing it and what great pride and joy that he took in wearing it. In fact, the story that he tells is his battalion commander, if you can imagine Alpha Company 19 gets, you know, First Lieutenant Fox, and, you know, you can imagine, who is this guy?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he's a Bronze Star guy from Korea. He used to be a gunny, and now you can see, what? And he rolls in looking like, you know, Wes Fox might be the real Sergeant Stryker, okay? I mean, without the drinking piece of it. But, I mean, that guy walks in looking every bit of what you would expect. And then he tells a story that his company, his corpsman, had gone back to the battalion CP and was telling everybody in the CP or a group of people in the CP what First Lieutenant Fox had done. And so that got back to the battalion commander, and he was there a few days later, and he said he was sitting on his helmet, and Lieutenant Colonel Smith at the time, later to become General Smith, said that he was going to put him in for the Medal of Honor. He said, I almost fell off my helmet. And it was just really interesting to hear him talk about then, you know, that Lieutenant Colonel Smith, then Colonel Smith, kept him updated. Hey, it's here. He's approved it. You know, Secretary of Navy approved it. It's on the president's desk, so that means you're going to get it. And he's just waiting for the right time to sign it and award it to you. And he talks about his disappointment in that the ceremony at the White House, because of the political time, was very small. His sisters couldn't and brothers could not bring their spouses. Guys in his platoon could not attend. And he's expressed disappointment with that. But then he said, you know, Colonel Smith told me, when you win that award, that's the only one you wear. He said, so I'm a captain at the basic school. And then he kind of chuckles and said, and I never even went to school there. He said, yeah. I'm there teaching. And I just remember thinking when I heard that, yeah, you don't need to have attended to teach there, okay? Because what you had in your head was what they wanted. But anyway, he says, so that's what I did. You know, Colonel Smith is now the CEO of the basic school. I'm working there as a captain. And so after I receive the Medal of Honor, it's the only award I wear. He said, I did that less than a year. And then I thought about it, like, what must other Marines think of me if this is the only one I'm wearing? And he said, I regret that. They must have thought I was just an arrogant SOB. But he appears to, you know, again, I only was in his presence a couple times, and he literally sucked the air out of the room in a very positive way. That's Colonel Fox. That's Wesley Fox.
Yeah.
And you looked. And your thoughts on his passing, Tom?
Well, it's a, you know, a loss for all of us because he continued to serve.
Right.
And like others who, after they retire, make the decision that there's still more to give, and he saw that. And I was just so pleased that he continued on to provide that example for our youth. I use from time to time a saying that I once heard, that a society is in trouble when its elders cross the street to avoid talking to its youth. And so now that I'm an elder, I cross the street in order to talk to the youth. And that's what Les Fox did. When he took off the uniform, he really didn't take it off. He continued on as, you know, that example, that role model, that elder who was willing to cross the street in order to talk to the youth, in order to share with them the things that he had learned the hard way, the tremendous leadership lessons that he observed and that he exhibited. All of those things are just vitally important, I believe, for our nation to continue on and to continue to produce youngsters who will someday be like Les Fox, and that is a model for all of us.
You know, a leader, you know, he tells that story about the first 4 years that he was in the Marine Corps, he didn't wear civilian clothes. When he went back to his parents' farm to farm, he wore his utilities. When he went out in town, he wore a uniform. He said, that's how excited, and he says it laughing, he said, that's how excited I was to be a Marine. He said, I'd like being a Marine. And you know what, and it seemed like he enjoyed that his entire life.
Yep. He loved being a Marine. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And I would only hope that every Marine had that same feeling.
No, and you know what? It's our job. I think we've all learned this in our lives. But, you know, it's certainly sad, you know, passing. But Les Fox lived a great life. And those of us who were touched by him, you know, celebrate that in some way, shape, or form, we were touched by him, and certainly need to take his example to heart and reflect on ways that we can be more like him upon his passing. But, Tom, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about him. Truly a Marine Corps icon. And you had the privilege to serve with him and actually be his commanding officer. Did you give him good fitness reports?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And he deserved every word and everything. And one of the things I was proudest of was that I recommended highly, in fact, wrote an endorsement for him to get into the college degree completion program, which he did. And we visited him out in Colorado as he was getting his degree, as we were heading out to join 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, where I was going to be the executive officer. So, yeah, he deserved every word of it and continued on to serve us well and faithfully.
And you know what? I'll read you an email. Mac, one of the things that I noticed about Colonel Fox is he just wore it so easily. He looked like being a Marine for him was the most natural thing in the world. He was every bit the Marine, not just in his look, in his manner, the way he treated other people, in his courage in combat, in his desire to serve and not go home, which he could have done at the end of his 12-month advisor tour, but he wanted to fight. He wanted to make a difference. But when you met him and were near him, he was a decent man. He treated you with respect. He expected you to do the same. I think he was one of the greatest Marines I've ever been around for all those reasons. His decency, his professionalism, and there was no denying, as General Droughty mentioned a few minutes ago, he was straight out of Central Casting. He very much looked the part. And you knew when you put on your dress uniforms, especially when you wore medals, and he rolled into the room, everybody stopped and looked because of the way he looked, and especially his dress blue uniform. God bless him. God bless his family. I appreciate the program this morning.
Yeah. Nice comment. Very well done.
Central Casting. All right, I want to have you back to talk about the Navy maybe next week and what they're going through and where you see that needing to go, because certainly they're getting sanded down to the metal, and it's going to be important how they come back. I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
You bet. Give me a call and let me know what time looks good.
Yes, sir. All right. Thanks, Tom.
All right, thank you. God bless you. Semper Fidelis.
Yep. You too. Semper Fidelis. That is Tom Droughty talking about Wesley Fox. We're going to take a break. Chris Woodbridge is going to join us here momentarily, so don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on a Thursday edition.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.